Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Merhat Sharipjan, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Merhat, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me today.
All right. This week, we're going to talk about Russia and Belarus again, this time about crackdowns on peaceful protests in both countries over the weekend. On Saturday, police and other law enforcement authorities changed tack in their approach to the protests that have persisted in the far eastern Russian city of Khabarovsk since the popular regional governor was arrested back in early July. This time, on Saturday, they forcefully dispersed the protests. For weeks and even months, these unprecedented demonstrations in Khabarovsk were a big focus of media attention. But there's a lot going on just beyond Russia's borders right now, with the war in Nagorno-Karabakh, political upheaval in Kyrgyzstan and Belarus. And there's also other things happening in Russia. There's a surge of COVID-19 cases there, as in many other countries. I think a number of observers and journalists who've covered the protests are saying that the demonstrators feared that this would happen when attention kind of faded to some degree, and that it looks like the state, the law enforcement agencies, the Kremlin, may have seen an opportunity and cracked down. Merhat, what's your impression? Was this essentially a calculated clampdown or something more random?
I think it is what Moscow was preparing for some time. I mean, the Kremlin.
Yeah.
The thing is, we know that protests themselves were very unusual when they started. And Moscow hoped that they will last for a couple of weeks maximum, and that was not a case. And they were attentively following the developments, trying to find a way when the exact time for clampdown comes. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the Kyrgyz upheavals right now. I think it was it also played some kind of role here. We have two types of protests in the former Soviet Union. We witnessed last year what happened in Kyrgyzstan when the situation developed so fast and quickly. And the Kyrgyz protesters, as usual, chose a very violent protest, very decisive. They were just clashing with police, getting inside the government buildings, and taking over the government headquarters. Meanwhile, in Belarus, it was peaceful. People were just peacefully giving flowers to police, and police was responding with brutal attacks and beatings and arrests.
Mm-hmm.
So in Kyrgyzstan, the developments in Kyrgyzstan show that things can be changed so quickly and fastly when people can do it in a more aggressive way. And I think, in a way, it played a role here, too, because everything coincided here. The attention to Khabarovsk, it became kind of a routine now. Plus, these developments in Kyrgyzstan show that it's time to just stop it.
Yeah, and I wonder whether there's also an element of thinking in terms of for when Alexei Navalny returns, if he's able to return to Russia, you know, kind of a signal of, look, we're not going to allow this kind of protest. I mean, I think it's early to make that kind of a guess, but I think that might possibly also be a factor.
Absolutely. I quite agree with that, yes.
All right. Well, you mentioned the unrest in Kyrgyzstan and Belarus as well. Now, we're not going to talk about Kyrgyzstan in detail today or the fighting in Nagorno-Karabakh. But Belarus was another place where there was a crackdown on protests this weekend, a brutal one in Minsk and other cities on Sunday, yesterday. The rights group Vesna says that nearly 600 people were detained. I think that, apologies if that's not the latest figure, And there are chilling images and video of the violent treatment of protesters and detainees, as there have been in previous weeks since the disputed election on August 9th, when Lukashenko claimed victory in a landslide. And there's a lot of opposition and just popular sentiment saying that that he stole the election. So now the scale of the crackdown this weekend was big, and it came a day after Lukashenko met with some of the opposition politicians he has jailed since even before the election, actually. Now, and this is sort of an unprecedented thing. I mean, he'd been referring to some of them as criminals. And now he's met with some of them. Now, some of the opposition members are in exile abroad, but Lukashenko did not meet with all of those who are jailed in Belarus. There was kind of a select group, I guess. One he did meet with was Viktor Babarika, who attempted to run against Lukashenko in the election, but was disqualified and jailed. He's a former head of Belgazprom Bank, majority Russian-owned and related to Gazprom. Now, there's some speculation that Russia may have had a role, I think, in this meeting of Lukashenko with opposition members who were jailed. The Kremlin has obviously been pressuring Lukashenko even before and now after the election. And presumably wants to take advantage of his weakness, his you know, declining and quite lack of popularity, lack of support among the Belarusian people. And the Kremlin hopes to end up, I think, with more influence, not less, when and if Lukashenko is pushed aside. And also, I think Moscow is said to be at least thinking about reaching out to different groups and individuals in Belarus, kind of on both sides, like on the state and the opposition, as much as it can, although Lukashenko has actually tried to make this difficult for Russia. Mayor Hutt, do you think there's anything to this idea of a Russian role, or do you think this meeting and the particularly brutal clampdown were entirely Lukashenko's initiative?
Well, I think it's a Russian role. The fact that he met with Babarika and people associated with him shows us that he is trying now to make sure that to find a way how to save his face and how to release these people. It was clear from the very beginning that Babarika was associated with Russian officials because, but that's my thinking. That's what I think because he, for many years, ran the bank associated with Gazprom, and to my mind, is the fact is that Russia was trying to make sure that Belarus Lukashenko will agree for further integration of Russia and Belarus in terms of the so-called union state. And Russia was working very hard to make, to force even Lukashenko do that for in the last several years, which Lukashenko vehemently tried to avoid and was resisting to that mm-hmm. move. I think the idea, the whole idea of Russian officials was to have Babarika and even Tsapkala, another. Anatoly Tsapkala, who was another possible candidate, who was clearly openly saying that we need to be to have a union with Russia, and his main accusation against Lukashenko was that Lukashenko was breaking the brotherly ties with Russia. So I think Russia was trying to break Lukashenko through these elections, putting this Babarika and Tsapkala as candidates. In if they win, then the integration is there in their pocket. If they lose, I completely understood that Lukashenko will be unpopular and they will reach their goal. So it's a win-win situation for Russia in any case. So, and now it's time, it's clear that Lukashenko is supported by Russia. Russia chose the variant B, and now there is necessary to release Babarika and his people. And actually, two of Babarika's people were already released. Late in the evening, in October 11th, the state television, Belarus One, television channel Belarus One, showed a report, broadcast a report that Yuri Voskresensky and Dmitry Arabkovich, they were released, these two people associated with Babarika's election campaign. And Voskresensky said that I was asked to develop a constitutional changes, and I was also asked to define ways for release, quote unquote, of people who turned out to be not as dangerous as they seemed to be before.
Right.
So I think there will be very, very, very soon we'll see that Babarika and others will be released, and this is completely the deal with Russia. That's what my thinking is about.
So, yeah, I mean, it sounds like. Certainly, it seems like Moscow is trying to, I mean, they're going for this these constitutional changes that Lukashenko is proposing, and that you know, most of the opposition says, well, no, we need a new election first. But it seems like Russia is trying to, you know, kind of get its way gain control over essentially politics in Belarus by pushing for this and through this these constitutional changes. So, but I wonder whether, you know, Lukashenko hasn't gone too far really already, and whether, I mean, I think regardless or related, but regardless of, you know, kind of sentiments toward Russia among the various opposition leaders and members. And I think one thing that this meeting in jail was, I think a lot of analysts said, is an attempt to, you know, drive a wedge between opposition members. And I just wonder whether, you know, to what degree that's going to succeed, you know, and I guess we'll find out, you know, in the coming days and weeks and months.
Sure. I agree with that, too.
All right, we're running out of time. We're going to have to wrap it up for today. Merhat, thanks very much for joining me. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
All right, I'll be back next Monday with another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for my Week in Russia newsletter. Thanks for listening.